B-Pod Studios.
Making the workday a little more entertaining.
Floppity flop flop flop.
It's Zoe and the Beetle on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Major League Baseball and Commissioner Rob Manfred told reporters over the weekend, you will see pitch clocks in spring training games. Yep. We will start getting ready for the possibility that we're going to use the pitch clock on opening day.
Everyone's like, what? Wait.
This opening day? As in April 2019 opening day?
Yes.
Love it.
This coming opening day, we could have a pitch clock in place.
I don't think it's going to happen, but love the idea.
Right now, they're only going to be used during spring training games. The regular season begins March 28th. Manfred said the talks with the Players Association about the clocks continue, and he's hoping to reach an agreement with the union soon. ESPN's Jeff Passan reporting this. By the way, we've been Jeff Passan fans on this show and on this station for quite some time. He's about to become the Wojnarowski or Schefter of baseball. And he was the one who broke the news today on the Machado deal for 10 and 300.
Just the go-to guy. Yeah, just knows everything.
He's good.
Yep.
Big fan of him. He's been on this show before.
Would you?
Not anymore. Now he's at ESPN. He's a high-profile type of guy. That's the end of that. But Jeff Passan reports that they're hoping to get a deal done before opening day to put the clocks in this season.
I would be shocked. I would be absolutely shocked. That seems to be something the players would be, like, completely dragging their feet on.
They are. They hate it. However, according to their CBA, Manfred has the ability to just unilaterally put it in now. So he could just say, you know what? I tried to deal with you in good faith. You fought me on it. You're not giving an inch. Too bad.
Do it.
They're in.
Do it.
But he doesn't want to do that. I mean, he wants to sort of play the
game.
And he would rather, and I understand the league's position is for, you know, potential labor issues that might be coming down the pike in baseball that they want to try and keep as peaceful of a process as they can.
Just the kowtowing to the players. It just never ends. These players have so much power. These baseball
players.
NFL
guys like yourself.
We're so bitter.
You're so bitter and you're so mad. And you say, I can't believe that this league treats us the way they do. And they don't give us, you know, why don't we have the rights that other. And then you talk about the other leagues.
Yep.
Oh, these guys are just bending over for these players.
I got, you know what?
Stop it.
I got to have an opinion.
You wish that football treated their players the way baseball does.
Maybe
the NBA does, or
it's
NHL.
Like deep down there,
it is.
Maybe.
You can't complain about the way the players get treated in the other leagues.
I can't?
You should be complaining about the way they've been treated historically in the NFL.
Okay.
Yourself included.
All right, fair enough.
Right? You can't get mad when the players get things.
I'm pro-player
Ted?
I'm pro-player more times than not. There's just a couple of these sports that we've, you know, basketball and baseball, that you just go, there's a lot of power
there. What does this clock do to get in your way of you being, you know, your earning power or your safety as a player or what? This doesn't impact any of those things.
Don't think it does, though.
The players will think it does. Right. This will actually make your sport easier to be consumed and could potentially be a boost for a sport that I think needs it because it's lacking in a major way with younger generations. They don't attract those viewers. So this could be great. This could be great for baseball. I'm excited about the possibility of a pitch clock. The owners of the Red Sox talked about it. What day was it? Sunday? I'm getting my days confused. Yesterday was a holiday. This was Sunday.
No, it was yesterday.
It was yesterday. Sorry. Yesterday they spoke at spring training at Fort Myers, and here's what John Henry, Tom Warner, at their press conference, this is the pitch clock stuff.
About the 22nd pitch clock, are you looking forward to that?
I am. I prefer 12, but...
Which is the rule.
That's the rule, so why shouldn't... So, anyway, it's a step in the right direction. We need to shorten the time of these games, and we need there. I mean, We feel strongly about it. Pace of play is really important. We're not in the 1950s. People have a lot of other things to watch and to do, other forms of entertainment. We need to have the game moving.
So, the pitch clock has worked in the minor leagues. I think this is a good step in the right direction. There's going to be no penalty in spring training if you exceed it, but you'll get a warning from the umpire. But, I mean, from our point of view, John and I, as you said, we feel that, there are necessary improvements that the game needs to make, and we feel that hopefully our partnership with the players will allow us to make some more.
Was that Tom Warner kind of interrupting John Henry and kind of basically saying, I got this, John. Hold my beer. Let me finish the thought for you. Did I hear that right?
Or all I can think about is Shaughnessy saying they bring like Warner along because he likes to be heard. He likes to talk.
It feels like John, step aside.
Ask anybody in Boston who owns the Red Sox, 99.9% of the people you ask will say John Henry owns the Red Sox. None of them will mention Tom Warner. It's like he's John Henry is the baseball pirate with the parrot on his shoulder, and it's Tom Warner.
I'm going to make people know I'm the owner, damn it.
Who's this guy? Who's he?
They were chatty yesterday, man.
John Henry gets it. John Henry totally
Not
gets it.
Not many owners say it like that.
He
though.
Wants it to be 12 seconds.
Henry spoke like it's done, and it's going to happen. Yeah.
He did. He sounds confident that it's happening and that it will happen by the time we get to opening day. What a pleasant surprise.
It would be awesome.
And by the way, 20 seconds is a ton of time. It's plenty. I don't know if you want to do Jim Louth math again, but Jim Louth did a number of mathematical equations last year and figured out the time it would save and average time. It will make a difference. And it's still plenty of time. There is no pitcher outside of, I don't know, David Price who should feel rushed with a 20-second pitch clock. 20 seconds keeps it moving. But it's not 12. Okay, then you might feel like you're rushing a little bit. But 20 is doable. Everybody should be able to adjust.
I'd love to know what the average. Like,
and then
I
shorten it up every season going forward by a second.
What about those games down in Arlington in July, though, at the ballpark in Arlington? You know, and I don't know. Kershaw's kind of known for his taking forever of them. Like, it's a hot summer day and like it's going to be impactful, I think, to in certain situations, ballparks during certain times of the year.
Yeah,
but I'm all for it.
Kershaw is already griping about it.
Yeah,
He said he will ignore the new measure. I'm not going to pay attention to it. The left-hander said on Monday, "If I go over, then I go over. I'm not going to change anything I do. I'm not going to pay attention to it one bit. And if it becomes a problem, I guess I'll have to deal with it then, but I think there's ways to fake it. If it looks like I'm winding down or something, you can step off. I'm sure there are ways around it. I'm not too worried about it."
Wow.
That's Clayton Kershaw.
Boom.
Yesterday.
He just comes right back.
The jackass.
With his game plan for circumventing the rules right there. He doesn't give a bleep, does he?
Has no interest in trying to, maybe do what they're asking the players to do and will soon be mandated. What's going to happen opening day? You're still going to ignore it if it counts? You might want to ignore it in a spring training game. You're not going to ignore it. It's all tough talk. They're not going to ignore it. They're going to have to go by it.
Forgive my ignorance, but if it's being done in the minor league, what are the consequences if you exceed the 20 seconds?
Without Zolak and Bertrand, your workday is just pushing papers and eating lunch.
What, is there a problem?
With Zolak and Bertrand, it's pushing papers, eating lunch, and talking sports.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Way better. Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the sport.
I'd prefer 12, but...
Which is the rule.
That's the rule, yeah. So why shouldn't... So, anyway, it's a step in the right direction. We need to shorten the time of these games, and we need we feel strongly about it. Pace of play is really important. We're not in the 1950s. People have a lot of other things to watch and to do, other forms of entertainment.
John Henry yesterday talking about putting in a 20-second pitch clock. The 12-second pitch clock is in an independent league. I think it's one of the Atlantic leagues. It's tell you which one it is. 12 seconds. That is quick.
That is fast.
That is moving.
Why does 20 seconds feel fast to me, too? But you're saying it's not. It's plenty of time.
It's really not because of you don't have to actually throw the pitch within the 20 seconds. You have to come to the set. You have to go into the start of your windup. You don't have to actually release the ball within those 20 seconds.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes a difference.
It does.
To me, it does. Yep.
And so, with that being the case, what Clayton Kershaw is saying is technically true, that there are workarounds. It's the Atlantic League, by the way, that has a 12-second pitch clock.
And, Ted, that was 20 seconds ago. You said 20 seconds isn't a long time.
Gotcha.
You guys just talked about that whole thing in 20 seconds.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great example of how much time there is to between...
We just go to silence, we'd have all sorts of alarms going off back here.
Right. If we don't talk, if we shut the microphones off for 20 seconds.
That's true.
That's a long,
long time.
So you get a 20 seconds to begin your windup or the motion to come to the set position. Like the motion of just coming to the set has to happen within 20 seconds. That's not throwing the pitch. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think John Henry is saying, no, make it 12. And therefore you're forcing them to actually throw it within 20. But I think that's a bit much. Let's at least start with 20 and get it going. The pitcher, as I said, does not have to necessarily release the ball, but must begin the windup, begin the motion to come to the set position. Mm-hmm. For the first pitch of an at-bat, the timer starts when the pitcher has possession of the ball somewhere within the dirt of the mound. Okay? And the batter is in the dirt circle surrounding home. So the clock gets going. The timer will stop as soon as the pitcher begins his windup or begins the motion to come to the set position. If you feign a pickoff move or you step off the runner, the rubber with runners on base, that resets the clock too. So you can step off with runners.
See that a lot. Then.
Back to 20.
There you go.
Umpires have the authority to stop the timer and order a reset of the timer if they feel it was too quick or was set too fast. Following any event that permits the batter to leave the batter's box, such as a pickoff play, the timer starts when the pitcher has possession of the ball in the circle. And the batter is in the circle surrounding home plate whenever they decide to come back. So there's a lot of workarounds here. Following the umpire's call of time, or if a ball becomes dead and the batter remains at bat, the timer starts when the pitcher is on the pitcher's plate. That would be the rubber on the mound. Mm-hmm. On the rubber, and the batter is in the batter's box. So you foul one off, it doesn't start again until the pitcher's on the mound with the ball and the batter's in the box. That doesn't speed up anything there.
Yeah, because you can hang out off the mound.
Which is why these players should stop complaining. Because if you read through this, mm-hmm. you would realize it's not that restrictive. It's just to avoid the 30-second, 35-second in-between pitch nonsense with some of the worst defenders. And so if you don't start the windup, or if you don't come to the set within the 20 seconds, that is when a ball is awarded to the batter. I like that. There's
that.
Also the timer, though, when it comes to the inning breaks. And I don't know if they're going to get more strict on this, but basically you have the possibility of going to the plate as a batter with an 0-1 count if you don't get your ass in the box. And pitchers, same thing. If you don't get up on that mound, you can start with a 1-0 count. So that's a possibility as well.
I love it. I love it all. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot there, Beetle. It just sounds almost like it's going to be too technical, maybe too hard to, like, police, you know, consistently and accurately all the time.
My thing is,
there's a lot of gray there.
If you come to the set and you're staring at a batter and you're trying to, you know, can the batter still call time and back out of the box? And can the pitcher just step off the rubber and there's no penalty? Because when that happens, what are you really solving?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest problems in the game. What have you solved? So the pitch clock needs to get just put in. That's how I think. Get it in there. Get it implemented.
See how it goes.
Have it up there. Have them have, you know, operationally speaking, have the people working in the ballpark and the players on the field aware of it and have it as a system. And then start to get restrictive with it down the road.
Tom had a good idea. Just reset like the NFL play clock. When the stoppage in play, it goes to 25. Do the 12 seconds after the step off.
Well, I like that. I like that.
Gets back on the rubber, 12 seconds starts. Instead of 20.
I like that.
Meaning you... So go to 25, and regardless, the ball has to be thrown before the end of that 25.
No, like the NFL play clock goes down to... Instead of... it's only 25 seconds
mm-hmm.
if there's a stoppage in play. it's less than the normal play clock.
Which is 35.
So if you step off the rubber and there's a 20-second clock, you bump it down to 12 then.
Sorry, I misunderstood. My apologies. So you're saying have it so that if there is that stoppage,
it doesn't reset fully.
You step off the mound, you don't get another 20, you get 12 then.
I like it.
I like it.
See, Tom's solving problems.
Boom. You know what, though? You know what I would do? I'd make it 10. Half the time. You get 10 seconds.
That's plenty. The second time up, you reset. Now you know your pitch. Now you feel comfortable. Boom. Yeah. 10 seconds. I'm down with that.
I think we were talking back here about the crowd, too. Like, what if the clock gets to, like, 8 seconds and the crowd starts going 5, 4, like an NBA game?
That's why I feel like there's so many things that go wrong
or
with
you
this.
You start faking them out like an NBA game where you're yelling 4, 3, and it's at 8.
That's what I mean.
It's at 8 seconds and you're going 4, 3, 2, 617-779-0985. Barbara's in Beverly. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, guys. Hi. How are you today,
good.
Mark? Good. I missed all, but I'm glad to see you there, Ted. I've seen you before, and you're really good.
Thank you.
And I watched you play when I was younger. I just wanted to say couple quick things. I like when David beats Goliath, and that was the case in the Colin Kaepernick case. I really liked that. But I wanted you to give me an opinion on what you thought of Antonio Brown coming to the Patriots. I know he's 30 years old, but he also seems much more of a Patriot, and he had to work with that foolish quarterback whose name right now I can't remember because I can't stand him. But at any rate, he had to work with him for years. Thank you. I'm sorry. He had to work with him for years, and I think he would fit into the system great. What do you guys think?
Okay, so the question would be, let's pose it this way. If you had your choice, don't factor in contracts, don't factor in anything other than the player and what they, you know, they're on the field production, how they would fit, and whatever their baggage might be. Okay, take the money and the ask out of it. Would you rather have Odell Beckham Jr. or Antonio Brown?
This is tough.
Because they are both very, very talented guys.
This is so tough. Look, I think Odell Beckham's a bigger jerk face. I do. I think Antonio Brown can be kind of insufferable at times, but I would rather Antonio Brown's a tough dude. He's a tough dude. You know what? You don't see him disappear from games, right? Like I see him he can get mad, he can get fired, he can be pissed off. He's not getting the targets, but the guy fights and he plays hard. I've seen Odell Beckham mentally get checked out, completely get checked out. You can get in his head. And all of a sudden,
wait, you don't think Antonio Brown has been checked out to the point where he didn't play at the end of the season?
Okay, well, that's, I'm just saying.
I mean, he flat out quit.
I just, in game, though, he, right. I mean, he did leading up to that game. But I'm saying once the game is on and once he's in the game, I feel like that's tough. I mean, if you take both guys' intangibles along with what they are able to do, I just feel like Antonio Brown would be easier to kind of corral and keep it together than OBJ.
I feel differently about this. I feel that Odell Beckham Jr.'s issues are pretty much football issues, teammate issues. When you're talking to Antonio Brown, he has off the field legal and borderline criminal issues, it feels, that
sneaky, not a great guy.
I want nothing to do with if I'm the Patriots. Like Odell Beckham Jr.'s issues, yes.
Okay, I didn't factor in that.
He's been a pain in the ass. And he's been a lot to deal with, and he's had a real loser attitude about a lot of things there.
More maturity issues than character.
Bingo.
Okay.
He's an immature jackass, but he's not. He's not the
Maybe a bad guy.
He's not. I don't know if he's bad. Who knows? Nothing about him that says, "Oh, he's a bad guy." With Antonio Brown, there's a lot to dig into there off the field where you say that's a guy you don't want around your team.
That's fair.
Odell Beckham Jr., if you're talking about a guy who could completely, sort of change your mind about who he is as a player, Odell Beckham Jr., I think, has a better chance to do it than Antonio Brown.
Yeah. Look, Antonio Brown, you could see him as a bad guy because he's calling out his teammates. He's airing dirty laundry. I mean, he's going nuclear on that team.
Which isn't that different from what Beckham has done. I mean, he's called out teammates. He's complained.
Yeah.
He's done some of those things, not to the degree.
I just feel like it's a little different. a little different with Odell Beckham.
Neil is in Rockland today. Hi, Neil.
How you doing?
Good.
I promise to get my takes in 24 seconds.
Excellent.
I think the pushback on the Oilers is more the years than the money. And I think the San Diego Chargers owner, Padres owner, just became the worst owner in the league with the other owners. Just a thought. And why don't they just keep the batters in the box? I'll let you guys discuss that. Thanks.
Well, I think they absolutely want to keep the batters in the box. I think the pitch clock's really about both when you think about it.
Pitcher gets in, the batter gets in.
It's meant to speed everybody up.
It does.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. I can't think of a pitcher off the top of my head, but who's notoriously a kind of a fast worker. The batter gets in the box when he's working along with a pitcher. You know, they do different things. They call timeout to maybe get him off his rhythm, but they're in the box more times than not when you got a pitcher who's ready in the set position.
617-779-0985. Eric's in Boston. Hi, Eric.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. Pretty upset Zoe's not around, but I'll take Ted Johnson.
Oh, well, thanks. Zoe'll be back soon.
We can all agree that these two guys, as much of a headache that they both are individually, we can all agree that they both look up to Tom Brady and consider him the GOAT, right?
I don't know that about Antonio Brown. I know that about Odell Beckham Jr. He's spoken many times publicly, spoken through his social media accounts, that he's very much a fan of Tom Brady. Told him as recently as this weekend to Tom Brady that he loves him.
They both do, and Antonio showed his affection too as well with the whole Madden cover and, you know, trading places and whatnot. I think you put either one of these guys on the Patriots teams, I don't think we have to worry about any off the field and any headaches. I think these two are in it to win it, especially with TV.
Wait. Hasn't Antonio Brown been on a good team? He was on a good team this year. He was on a team that should have been in the playoffs.
He hates Roethlisberger.
He can't stand Roethlisberger.
For what reason?
I guess because he's in cahoots with the ownership or the head coach, right? Him and the head coach are, I guess, kind of thick as thieves, if you will. And so he has a problem with that. You know, maybe he feels like here it's more democratic.
Listen, you can try and make the case that Odell Beckham Jr. has not been surrounded with great teams or played on good teams. I mean, he's had a bad record. A losing record in four out of his five seasons. And some of those weren't even close. Downright terrible records. Antonio Brown? That's not the case with Antonio Brown. He's been in Pittsburgh since 2010 and has played with a team that's had winning records. I'm going to guess. Let me think. I'll just get the actual numbers just so we have them right. 12-4. They had back-to-back 8-8 seasons, mm-hmm. not losing records. Mm-hmm. And then 2014, they were 11-5, 10-6, 11-5, 13-3, 9-6-1 this year.
Mm-hmm. Never had a losing record.
Antonio Brown has been to the playoffs six times mm-hmm. and has played in a Super Bowl with his team. Odell Beckham Jr. has been to the playoffs once, and he screwed it up going to Miami and having that party, and they lost in the wild card round, but. Antonio Brown has been around for a long time and has played on good teams, mm-hmm. and he's always had these issues.
Same issue. I think part of it is Tomlin's. There's a little. He just gives him a long rope, if you will. I think where Belichick is a little different. Can you imagine any of these players, or just any player in the NFL, coming to New England and continuing with the antics on this team? Is, you know, especially on offense with Tom Brady as the quarterback, Josh McDaniels is the offense. I just can't even. Both of these guys, if they were any of them were here, Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham, I think would fall right in line. I can't imagine a scenario where it would be any different. Now,
and not only that, Antonio Brown, I think, is going to be 31.
Yeah.
No, what 31-year-old receiver? Versus, you want the young guy?
Yeah. What is he? Is he even 26?
He turned 26 in November.
Okay, so he's 26 years old.
Yep.
4 years. 5 years in age
is
a huge
difference in the NFL. Huge difference.
Yep. Hot takes.
I am Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Wrong song.
Oh. Zoe and Beetle, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, if your team got guaranteed money, tell them call me. AB can't do no more unguaranteed. So we clear. I want y'all to be clear and understand something. This is not a game, people. This is not for show. This is not to be cool. This is really to inspire you that, yo, no one could determine your destination but you.
That's Antonio Brown on the elliptical last night, Instagramming live.
Less is more, man. What? Less is more sometimes.
No, actually, if the Steelers told you they want you to play for them next year, they don't have to trade you. Well, guess what? They can dictate where you play. They could sit there and say, no, if you don't like it, go home. Don't get paid. No, you're not our problem. They could do that to you. And for some reason, the Steelers today have basically let it be out there after a meeting took place between Art Rooney, correct, and Antonio Brown, that they've all agreed mutually that trading him is the best thing to do. What kind of leverage do they have now in the deal? If you're another team that calls the Steelers today about the availability of Antonio Brown, what do you say if you're the Steelers? Yeah, we
got to get rid of him.
We want two first. yeah, sure. You guys have to trade him now. I'll offer you a second round pick. Do you want it? And I don't know if it won't be that bad, but still, they've lost quite a bit of leverage here the way the Steelers have handled it. What are you doing? You should just be, no, we're not trading him. End of story.
What do you think he would go for on the open market? I'd be so fascinated in that because he's going into his ninth year, I think. You know, he's almost 30. He's still a highly productive player. I don't know what his contract situation is. I mean, I guess he's making a boatload of money. So you have a guy that's about to hit 30, making a boatload of money, who's got a lot of issues, baggage, if you will, that comes with it. What does that get you on the open market? I mean, without the baggage, I could see, you know, the age and the contract.
I don't know.
You're still getting a first rounder, but
yeah, all I know is that last year Amari Cooper went for a first rounder.
Yeah,
and Amari Cooper ended up being worth it. Believe it or not, that was the stunner of the NFL season.
That was a
trade.
Shock,
in hindsight, looked like a good deal. They got a good player that helped their offense in a big way. They were a playoff team.
Only for half the year they got him.
Yeah, and he's
for a first rounder.
Yes, but you know for Antonio Brown, who's arguably the best receiver in the game, well, if you got a guy that's worth a first last year and Amari Cooper, then this guy's certainly worth a first too.
Oh, easily a first. I'm just saying, like, multiple firsts.
Maybe Jerry's the guy we'll call and get him on the team down there in Dallas.
Just takes one.
Give up another one. That's right. It only takes one. It takes one team. The Patriots will not even get a shot. You know, we talk about it. Who would you rather have? They will get no chance at talking to the Steelers.
Steelers don't want to give. I mean, they're trying to beat the Patriots.
They're trying to make them better. They're not talking to the Patriots. No. They're not talking to anybody in the AFC that has anything.
What do you got, Jags? We'll talk to you.
Right.
What do you got, Jaguars?
Right. Oh, let's call some of the bad teams in football. What about if the Giants and Steelers just swap?
My feeling is the Giants want no part of either.
That's how I would feel.
I think either team would say no.
It's been speculated.
It's like more the same.
It's been speculated, but that would be such a huge win for the Steelers in that deal. Mm-hmm. It would. And that's why I don't think there's any chance of that happening. That's why I don't think that we're going to see anything like that. But, yeah, come on. We're not going to see them even consider talking to the Patriots about it.
We've talked about – we've used other – examples of players getting over on the NFL, Kaepernick, Eric Reed. I think we both think that was a huge win for the players and those, and that the NFL's got major egg on its face. It's kind of another win for the players with Antonio Brown and the Steelers. Like, it's kind of like the NBA. I mean, he basically took a page from the NBA. You know, the Anthony Davis, I wanted to get traded. You know, if you complain and you bitch enough and you whine and you want your out, you want you off that team. Antonio Brown is able to basically manipulate them into getting what he wanted, just like some of the guys we're talking about in the NBA. So it has to be a player of his ilk, somebody who's one of the best at his position. I think for that to even be a possibility, but it's very fascinating to me that here's a player on an NFL team in a culture where it's not the players that have the power, it's the coaches, that he was able to complain his way out of town like he has. You just don't see that ever in the NFL. Hardly ever.
Player got his way. Got his way and just bitched until they said, oh, yeah, fine, we'll trade you. Right?
Yeah.
And that's how it's going to play out. It's
pretty much.
They give.
Give it to me. Give it to me now, damn it.
Tell me I'm wrong. I don't know how you could.
And they give.
We need to break news every day.
And they give.
I love breaking news.
Can't get this kind of analysis just anywhere.
And now, it's time to take.
That's not a hot take.
End of the day.
Hot takes from the day.
Today's takeaways with Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Today's takeaway is brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. If you're not close to an Awaken 180 location, their worldwide program offers the same great results from wherever you are, online at awaken180weightloss.com. We have some things that we did play today and some things that we didn't. We'll start with the things we did not get to. We discussed ownership, Red Sox ownership, speaking in Fort Myers yesterday, gathering around the picnic table. Yee, wee, everyone getting together.
Very comfortable. They're very chatty.
Very laid back, yeah, taking their victory lap, being right about everything, just being champions. I saw the picture of Alex Cora floating around yesterday, him addressing everybody with the trophy, like on a little table in the clubhouse next to him as he addressed everybody. Yeah, it's nice when you can do it that way. But we mentioned this with Dan Shaughnessy. Red Sox ownership admitted that they screwed up the John Lester negotiations going back 5 years.
You have been on record in the past about being reluctant to commit to players 30, pitchers in particular, 30 or older, the John Lester situation. You then later signed David Price. Is it fair to say that, you know, your thinking on that has evolved a little bit, or does Chris fall out of the norm for you and isn't as big a risk?
I think Chris falls out of the norm because he's just such a great, not just a great pitcher, but a great part of the team, as we saw in the World Series. He had quite an impact just being on the bench of the World Series. So he's a special player. We would love to be able to sign him. I think he would like to as well. But there are the realities of the marketplace and budgets. And this is his opportunity to be a free agent, so potentially, which we'd like to avoid, but I think he would as well. So something could happen.
Is everything you just said sort of applied to John Lester a few years ago?
I think we blew the John Lester. We blew re-signing him in spring training. So for reasons that are pretty apparent now, which I won't go into, but they're apparent.
Pretty apparent now. Actually, I'm pretty sure it was apparent 5 years ago when you blew the John Lester thing, that you had blown it and it was wrong.
Were you surprised to hear that admission from him, or was it kind of not too shocked?
Partially, because they have no reason to have to admit it now. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, there's nothing that forces them to admit that. So, yeah, anytime you hear an owner admit that they screwed something up, I'm always a little bit surprised. But I also think there's, as Dan Shaughnessy mentioned, it feels like, yeah, we screwed that up. Because what? It was Larry Lucchino? And he's not here anymore, so now it's, yeah, we're all free and easy and ready to admit the mistakes we made. We.
Interesting.
He didn't say I screwed it up and should have intervened and should have said, no, this is a low-ball offer. We should have paid him more. He didn't say I screwed up.
Lucchino,
he said we screwed up. Gotcha. There's a difference there.
Fair enough.
But again, owners admitting they're wrong, it happens so rarely that I appreciate it a little bit, tiny bit. So, yeah, I'll take that from him. There's that. And then there's this willingness to really get aggressive with Chris Sale right now, which is the complete wrong time to do it. Chris Sale's coming back off an injury, needs to prove that he's still in good health, can still pitch well. And they're talking about getting aggressive with Chris Sale, who, according to John Henry, had a big impact in the World Series
from the bench. Yeah, from the bench.
What the hell are you talking about? Here's more on that. Chris Sale.
Sale's obviously has had some shoulder issues. Does that concern you? A long-term commitment to him?
No, he's healthy. He had minor issues. They ended up taking a bit of time. He needed some rest at one point, but he hasn't had any significant shoulder issues. Significant.
You been watching what we've been watching.
And you know what? We don't know because Chris Sale is apparently a big defender of HIPAA laws, and they'll never reveal anything about what actually happened with Chris Sale last year. So we really have no idea. But all of a sudden, you go out for that period of time, and oh, no, this was minor. Yeah. Yeah, he only missed a couple of months and then was crap when he came back, but it was mine.
There's some puckering up.
What?
On Chris Sale right now. That's what that interview on the Senate, I go, man, they are just gushing. They want Chris Sale, you know, bad, and they want him to know
his best work was in the Yankee series in the playoffs. That's what I thought. That was the best we saw from him, but he certainly was still not himself. He has to prove that he's himself again. John Henry's buying in hard. Maybe he thought that the market was truly down and they were going to try and get him on a deal. I wonder if he'd say the same things after seeing Machado get $300 million today. There is that. Also today, from Adam Schefter's podcast over the weekend, very aggressive in trying to get Trent Brown to admit how nice of a guy Tom Brady is.
What's it like blocking for him?
I mean, Tom's really one of the coolest guys I've ever met in my life. And that's no bullshit on any stretch of the imagination. He's really a cool guy. That's really the only way I can say it. Like,
what makes him cool, Trent? What makes him cool?
I don't know. He's just cool, calm, collective all the time. But, I mean, of course he means business and he's great at what he does. That's obvious. But but what people don't see is that he's a cool guy. You know what I mean?
He's a nice guy, too. Genuinely nice.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. Of all the questions to push him on.
Right?
It's the...
Right, Trent?
He's cool. How cool
is he? Cool. He's really nice, too.
Tell us how cool
Say
he is.
It, Trent.
What
Say
makes him cool, nice. Trent? What makes him cool?
What the hell? I mean, again, it was...
That was one of the most awkward
It
interviews.
Was like Brady was right there back in front of Judge Berman pleading his case and being genuine and
I'm told that genuineness shine through.
It's very important for Adam
Schefter. 10 kind of guy.
He's a 10 kind of guy, Trent. Trent, you should know this, right?
Right?
So weird.
That was very awkward. That it wasn't even an interview. I mean, it's supposed to be a podcast. It's supposed to be like, you know, just two guys chilling, talking. Some of the most awkward sound you'll hear.
And then there was this. Don't buy into these headlines. Trent Brown wants to stay with Patriots that you've seen blown up over the last, I don't know, 3 days. Trent Brown wants to stay with Pats. Like, oh, he really loves being a Patriot. Here's how it actually sounded on the podcast.
Any chance you're back in New England?
That's definitely something I would love, but hey, we're gonna cross that bridge when we get there.
Business is business, correct?
Yes, sir.
Oh. Can you hear it? Can you hear that passion for New England? Just coming right.
You really want to come back, don't you?
And again, pay attention to Schefter's question there. It's important how he phrased that. Which is any chance you're back with New England? Yeah. He's not asking it that way because he doesn't know something. Please. All right, Ted, where are you going tomorrow? You're in morning tomorrow?
I'll be in tomorrow morning with Rich. Fred Tutcher is out, so I'm going to be in at 6 a.m., man. I was supposed to be there today, but the late flight pushed me back to work with you, which I had a blast today. So
yeah, hey, no problem here.
Check me out tomorrow morning. I'll be on with 6 to 10.
So that means Jones is back in middays tomorrow.
Correct.
You're leaving me with Jones tomorrow.
Yep. All yours, man.
Jones, McCone. McCone, you're back again?
I am, yeah.
All right.
Have fun, boys. Had fun today, man.
We got McCone back in here, and we'll talk to Brad Stevens tomorrow at 10:20. They're flying to the West Coast, so he's going to be on early with us, early in the show. Can't wait to hear Jones talk to the head coach of the Celtics. That I'm excited about. I think maybe we should leave the first question to him.
Absolutely, you should. You're going to practice it like you did with me?
We might have to practice it in the very first segment tomorrow. Jones asking the first question to Brad Stevens. Should be fun. That's 10:20 tomorrow. Felger and Mads with all hands on deck. No vacation time there. They're with you coming up in just a moment. Talk to you tomorrow at 10. Bye. Have a great day.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.